Welcome back to EVA 2858. We are now in Lecture 13, and we're looking at environmental regulatory agency jurisdictions and local current environmental news. By the end of this lecture, you should be able to describe two federal agencies other than the US EPA that are responsible for enforcement of environmental laws and name and briefly describe several laws they administer. Describe why the Army Corps of Engineers and not the EPA has the authority to administer the Federal Water Pollution Control Act. Name one Florida agency other than the Florida Department of Environmental Protection that is responsible for enforcement of environmental laws and name and briefly describe several laws they administer. And one of the current events that is making headlines in our local news. So, agencies. As we have gone through this class, we have discussed a number of laws and how they are applied. We've also been dealing with a variety of agencies, both federal and state, which have the responsibility to administer these laws as part of the executive branch of the government, both state and federal. So starting off, we've got the president. The president of the United States has the ultimate authority, being the head of the executive branch, to enforce the laws as enacted by Congress, the legislative branch. So the president's overall views and strategies for running the government are what influence how the laws are enforced, whether enforcement is strict and harsh or poorly funded and lackadaisical. Originally, when some of the laws we discussed were passed, the enforcement of them was farmed out to different agencies. Three classes ago, when the Federal Insecticide, Fungicide, and Rodenticide Act was passed in 1947, enforcement was delegated to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. When the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency was established in July of 1970, most environmental laws enforcement was moved under the EPA's purview. So, quickly looking at the EPA, they were delegated the task of enforcing most environmental laws. They're responsible for interpreting congressional mandates and creating regulations to carry out Congress's intent. When looking at the laundry list of environmental laws, the EPA enforces most of them. So there's the Clean Air Act, the Coastal Barrier Resources Act, the Coastal Zone Management Act, Comprehensive Environmental Response Compensation and Liability Act, Federal Insecticide, Fungicide, and Rodenticide Act, the Federal Water Pollution Control Act, the Endangered Species Act, the National Environmental Policy Act, the Resource Conservation and Recovery Act, the Safe Drinking Water Act, and the Toxic Substances Control Act. Next to look at is the Secretary of the Army. He, or she, was delegated the authority to issue permits under Section 404 of the Federal Water Pollution Control Act, i.e. the Clean Water Act. The Secretary is charged with carrying out studies and other tasks under the Water Resources Development Act, carries out tasks through the Army Corps of Engineers, and, of course, the Rivers and Harbors Appropriations Act of 1899, specifically known as the Refuse Act. Now, you can call the Rivers and Harbors Act the precursor of the Clean Water Act. The Rivers and Harbors Act gave the Corps a wide-ranging jurisdiction over various alterations of navigable waters. Initially, this act was used to control piers and wharves and dredge and fill operations. Far more important, a subsection of the Rivers and Harbors Act, known as the Refuse Act, Section 407, prohibited the discharge of refuse matter of any kind or description into navigable waters or other waters of the United States that fed into navigable waters without a permit from the Corps. Eventually, this authority was construed to include a power to prohibit or permit pollution discharges into the navigable waters of the U.S. So now we know why the Corps has the permitting authority and not the EPA. Now, the Rivers and Harbors Act was virtually unenforced against water pollution because it was justifiably thought that Congress intended it to apply only to structural obstacles of navigation. But of course, the environmentalists came along in the 1960s and put it to active use as an enforcement tool. Next, we have the Occupational Health and Safety Administration, OSHA. The Occupational Health and Safety Administration also plays a role in environmental law. OSHA administers the Occupational Health and Safety Act. OSHA addresses environmental conditions within the workplace. The agency sets general industrial standards and a wide variety of specific health and safety standards, focusing on workplace conditions. OSHA standards would involve safety of physical structures, ladders, gangways, and so forth, as well as a variety of exposure standards related to the handling of toxic materials and harmful physical agents, including hazardous wastes. Air quality within any kind of processing plant or other workplace is subject to OSHA standards set in general terms or with reference to the particular materials being produced. OSHA is enforced through inspection by federal agents who make random inspections or who respond to clandestine complaints from workers. The agency has drawn criticism from both sides, from labor representatives who feel that it's a paper tiger with softer, unenforceable standards, and employers who treat it as a meddling and less than competent regulatory agency. Many cases involving environmental injuries to workers note that OSHA had failed to detect flagrant toxic problems in its inspections, or it totally failed to make inspections in the first place. One thing you might want to look up if you're curious about this is popcorn lung. Next is the Consumer Product Safety Commission. It's another agency that comes into play in the environmental law enforcement area. The CPSC administers the Federal Hazardous Substances Act. Under the Federal Hazardous Substances Act, a broad concurrent jurisdiction over toxins, hazardous substances, corrosives, irritants, and other similar chemical substances is granted to the CPSC. The CPSC issues regulations for the introduction of such products into interstate commerce. Heavy penalties, including both fines and imprisonment, are theoretically available for breach of the statute or regulations. Corporate defendants may be liable for introducing hazardous substances into commerce regardless of their knowledge or motivations. It is important to note that hazardous substances that are dumped someplace or transported to TSD facilities are not within the stream of commerce and are therefore not covered by the CSPC. Next, we've got the National Park Service. Oversees national parks and fights to enforce a variety of environmental laws in order to keep air pollution, water pollution, and a host of other environmental problems from knocking on any park doorstep. As we saw with the Everglades National Park, the NPS is fighting to preserve the Everglades ecosystem as it has been for generations in order for future generations to enjoy it. We have the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. These guys oversees national refuges, seashores, etc., as created under the Fish and Wildlife Coordination Act of 1934 as amended. They're delegated the responsibility to develop, protect, rear, and stock all species of wildlife, resources thereof, and their habitats, control losses of the same from disease or other causes, minimize damages from overabundant species, and provide public shooting and fishing areas. They're delegated the responsibility to make surveys and investigations of the wildlife of the public domain, including lands and waters or interests therein acquired or controlled by any agency of the United States. There's the Bureau of Indian Affairs. And you're probably wondering where BIA comes into play. BIA is empowered to enforce federal environmental laws on Indian reservations and other lands. So, the Clean Water Act, the Clean Air Act, CERCLA, RCRA, TSCA, etc., go through BIA because BIA is the federal government agency charged with being a liaison to the Native American tribes who have treaties with the federal government. There's the Department of the Interior. Now, we have the DOI here because it's the umbrella agency that oversees the National Park Service, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and the Bureau of Indian Affairs, as well as the Bureau of Reclamation, the U.S. Geological Survey, Bureau of Land Management, Minerals Management Service, and Office of Surface Mining. The Secretary of the Interior is charged with coordinating the efforts of the agencies under the DOI umbrella in order to have a single cohesive environmental policy. There's the Department of Defense that we cannot forget. DOD has a lot of land for bases between the Army, Navy, Marines, Air Force, and Coast Guard. And yes, I know the Coast Guard falls under the Department of Commerce, but the DOD is responsible for parts of any bases of the Coast Guard. DOD is held to abide by the laws of the federal government, and that includes environmental laws. Okay, so what about Florida? Who is in control here? Well, we've got the governor of Florida. The governor is the head of the executive branch, and he is charged with enforcing the laws as passed by the legislature. There's the Florida Department of Environmental Protection. It's like the EPA delegated the authority to enforce most of the laws in Florida pertaining to the environment, from clean water to clean air to permitting toxic chemicals. There's the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission. In Florida, the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission, commonly known as FWC, is the agency that deals with endangered and threatened species and designation and protection. Florida Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services is the agency delegated the task of administering the Florida Pesticide Law. This is the Florida equivalent of FIFRA. We have the water management districts. Now, even though the DEP is delegated the task of administering the Florida Clean Water and Safe Drinking Water Acts, DEP has further delegated that task to the local water management districts. Florida is divided into five separate regions called water districts. They are the Northwest Florida Water Management District, the Suwannee River Water Management District, the St. John's River Water Management District, South Florida Water Management District, which we're most acquainted with, and the Southwest Florida Water Management District. Then you've got county governments. They're responsible for what happens in their own backyard. Palm Beach County has environmental resource management. Palm Beach County Parks and Recreation is responsible for upkeep of the county's open spaces to provide for recreation by residents. So some current events in our backyard. We've got the good old Florida algae blooms. Our time together would not be complete without discussion on algal blooms. More algal blooms are on the horizon for Florida in 2023. You can track red tides with this tracker from the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission. The Fort Myers News Press reported in November 2022 that the area should expect to see more algal blooms from Lake Okeechobee in spring 2023 following Hurricane Ian's stirring of the lake and enriched sediments. We've got climate change attitudes. In 2020, the South Florida Sun Sentinel reported on a political poll looking at views on climate change. Floridians' views about climate change can shift widely based on age, politics, and location. The article states whether you think climate change affects you personally and what should be done about it depends largely on where in Florida you live, how old you are, and your political affiliation. Despite overall agreement that climate change is a problem, the poll also found sharply divergent views based on where people live, political affiliations, and age. A majority of Floridians believe climate change is a problem and something should be done about it. A majority of Florida voters favored a balanced approach that protects both the environment and the economy. That tack is favored by 55% of voters. An interesting way to track climate change news in Florida is through a Google News search for Florida climate change news, where you can go to tools and choose a time period of interest. Here is what the last month of news looks like. Then you have the Florida 2021 legislation. In spring 2021, the Florida legislature passed a bill that acknowledged climate change impacts on the state. You can learn more from the WUSF's reprinting of a Guardian article, and would require sea level rise information to be incorporated into state-financed buildings on the coast. The May 2021 press release is Right there, Governor Ron DeSantis signs bill to further strengthen Florida's resiliency efforts. Florida 2022 legislation. Following the above directive, the Florida legislature passed SB 1940, HB 7053, Statewide Flooding and Sea Level Rise Resilience, that established an Office of Resilience within the governor's office. This law went into effect on July 1st, 2022. For a clear list of all the environmentally focused bills that were introduced in the Florida House and Senate and their final outcomes, the group 1,000 Friends of Florida has a comprehensive list from the 2022 legislative session. They have it sectioned into the topics of community building, resilience, conservation, water, and transportation. I am not saying that I recommend or endorse any of their positions on these bills, nor does the Palm Beach State College, just that this is a pretty comprehensive list of what went on during the 2022 legislative session. The 2023 legislative session is scheduled to run from March 7th through May 5th, 2023. Next class will be environmental justice and green building and our final review. See you on the discussion boards.